The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. I'm Nathan, and as always, I'm joined by Marcus Blankenship. How are you doing, Marcus?
I'm doing well, Nathan. How are you?
I'm exhausted. I'm absolutely shattered. I went out for a bike ride this morning, and I'm just ready now to lie down, which is pretty pathetic, really, because it was a two-hour ride, and in May, I don't know if I've bitten off more than I can chew, but I've signed myself up for a 170-kilometer bike ride.
Oh my gosh!
Today was 2 hours, so I need to add about roughly another 6 hours to that.
I was going to ask, how long does it take to ride that far, generally?
Well, I've never ridden that far, so I couldn't tell you. I'm thinking somewhere along the lines of sort of 7 hours. 7 hours actually in the saddle, but I'm guessing it's going to be more than that, you know, once you stop for food and that kind of things. So yeah, it's going to be an all day affair.
Is this one of those fun rides where people are mostly doing it just for the camaraderie? And so you'll go in groups with your buddies and it's not a race.
There'll be a lot of that. No, it's not a race. No, it's actually called the Car 10-100, and it goes from Cardiff, which is the capital in Wales, to Tenby on the coast, on the west coast, which coincidentally is the hometown of my dad and a lot of my family. So it's going to be the first year of doing it, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. People do take it because a lot of people do it for charity. You know, they get people to sponsor them and things like that, and this year it's for cancer. And a lot of people, there are obviously people who take it seriously and they time it in the number of hours they take, whereas the great majority time it in how many pints they can take along the way. there are plenty of pubs apparently to stop off on the way. That won't be me, but I think I'll be a happy medium of against the clock and, you know, just trying to make it.
Well, good luck to you. So you've got a couple more months to train there, right?
Yeah, I've got a couple of months there, and then the month after that, I'm hopefully, fingers crossed, going to Italy to do a 530-kilometer race. Yeah, I've got to step it up a little bit.
Wow. Well, you know, we can all remember the time that we heard the famous Nathan Powell talk about, oh, 2 hours was so difficult. And, you know, we can then see you on the telly and we'll watch you, writing famously. And, oh, I remember when that guy could barely do 2 hours and you'll be a famous national sports hero.
Yeah. That'll be happening sometime soon. Yeah. So yeah, May 170 kilometers in one day, and then June 170 kilometers every day for 3 or 4 days.
Well, you know, it will require a lot of training and a lot of discipline. How will you know if you're ready? Do you just say, I have to be ready? Like, because this date is the date. That's the date of the race. So yeah, I'm going to be ready.
I am building up, obviously, to that date, and I am putting in a lot of training. What I'm not doing so much at the moment, though, is going out on the long rides. Today was only 2 hours because it was all the time I had, but usually for me, a long ride would be along the lines of 5 hours. So, yeah, I need to start building up those long rides on the weekend now because work is taking up more and more time at the moment, so it's hard to gauge. But, yeah, I'm training most days, so that even the days I can't get out on the bike, I've got the turbo trainer in the corner of the office. So I've got that hooked up to the TV, and I'm hooked up to Zwift. If any of you runners and cyclists out there know of Zwift, so I'm sort of able to. It's not like the old days where you were just cycling away with the fan in your face and nothing else, you know, music or reading a book. So you can actually sort of compete with people online now and from all over the world, and everything's social now, isn't it? Even riding your bike, you know. So.
Even riding your bike. Well, I feel like all of this is in some way a segue to our topic today, because the topic is going to require that maybe some training is involved, maybe some planning, maybe setting aside one kind of goal for another. I don't know why, it just reminded me, because the topic we wanted to discuss was, we get this question a lot. And the question is, when should I quit my job and go all in on my freelancing?
Yeah. On my side business. When are you ready? When are you ready enough?
When are you ready? And I feel like this, there's this wonderful analogy of a bike race, because Nathan, you're going to give up stuff over the next couple months, time with your family. Maybe you're going to eat differently. You're going to do things differently to achieve a goal. And the great thing is there's a date that that race happens. So all you can do is say, I have to be in the best shape I can to hit that date. Mm-hmm. But when you're thinking about when should you quit your job, oftentimes we don't have a date in mind. And so what we do is we say, well, maybe when I'm making enough, or when I have enough clients, or like if there were a date, it might almost be easier, right? Because we'd just be working really hard to say, I want to quit my job on this date, or I have to. Instead, we are always, at least I was, always wondering, is this the right time? Is next, like, am I there yet? Almost. It'd be sort of like training for a race, but you didn't know when the date of the race was going to be, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's funny because I know of people who are working on the side, and I think that's how it starts for a lot of people, isn't it? You know, they're working full time, they have a skill or something they enjoy doing, and so they're doing it in their evenings or they do it on the weekends. And I know people who have done that for years, and people who actually do really well at it and are taking in pretty decent money while doing it on the side. And it's always struck me as slightly curious that they've never, you know, if I've asked in the past, you know, so when you're gonna go full time on this, or when you're gonna, oh no, I can't. I think a long way behind that is obviously the fear of instability. You know, this is the idea of the freelance life is a very unstable lifestyle. But I know people that, like I said, have been doing this for years and they do very well at it, but that they're incredibly happy having that full-time wage coming in, paying the mortgage, paying for the car, paying for whatever it is, and then having the freelance gig on the side, which is also bringing them really money. And to me, it always seemed really strange that they would not want to take that plunge. I think you could say that some people enjoy the money, and obviously we all enjoy bringing in money, but I think there's a big fear level there, right? Of actually making that plunge of, you know, the race day finally, you know, arriving without you realizing it. I didn't have that. I found myself without a job, and it was literally, you know, as we spoke about the other week, door-to-door sales. I was without a job for one day. On the next, I printed up these home presentation packs and went door-to-door around the Irish bars in Madrid. So for me, it was just like, you know, this is literally do or die or sink or swim. You said that, you know, when you, the other week when we were speaking about Korea and when you started off, you were working full-time as well, right?
I was. In fact, you know, as you mentioned it, so when I started Creo, I was working full-time, and I did that company with one partner and then two partners. I did it part-time for, I guess, 2 years. But as you were talking, I remembered I had actually been freelancing for 8 years before that.
On the side?
On the side. Now, I only had one client. And I don't know, maybe some of you out there, this sounds familiar. You get one client. They seem to like you reasonably well. You're not making a lot of money, but then they're not real demanding either. And you do the work while you're, you know, sitting on the couch and your family's watching television, or maybe a Saturday morning you'll go to the, you know, you'll go to the client's location for a few hours. So for 7 or 8 years, I had this one client, and it brought in side money that helped us, you know, helped us live, helped us do extra things. But I never thought of myself as a business person. Like, I think I went into Microsoft Word and I found this really cheesy invoice template, and I would just type the invoice every week or every month and send it to them. It was really cheesy. I did zero accounting. I had no legal structure. I didn't ever worry about taxes. It was just like this comfortable thing on the side I had. And, you know, my wife would from time to time say, well, you know, actually, sometimes she would say, why are you doing this? But mostly, frankly, she would say, do you think this month you could work a little bit more at the side job? Because this and that, you know, we have a vacation coming up, or we need some extra money for Christmas. So it actually became a lever I could move to bring in more revenue to my house that didn't involve me going to my primary job and asking for a raise or having to look around to switch jobs. I wonder if I would have been perfectly happy with that for a long time if I hadn't met someone and then we decided to work together. And that's when we started a real company. And in a lot of ways, that's when my learning about business really began.
When you were working full time, were you working in the creative industries as well, or was it something completely unrelated?
Well, I always worked in, I guess you'd call it IT, in software engineering. And mm-hmm. so, but yeah, when I was working, I worked in an IT department for a big enterprise. And then on the side, I did programming for one client. And it was very comfortable. So maybe if we're going to talk today about this idea, when should I quit my job? If you're listening to this, I just want to put out there, maybe the answer is you don't have to. So Nathan has said, you know, he didn't really have that luxury, but maybe I would have. So there is always the option of you don't have to quit your job to do creative, interesting work on the side. Mm-hmm. And I think, in fact, in this day and age, more and more employers look for if you're in software, they look for open source contributions. If you're in design, maybe they look for your portfolio on Dribbble or I don't know what the new place is, but they look for people who continue to do work to push themselves and sharpen themselves. And doing work on the side can be a fabulous way to do that and get paid as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. You only have to look at taking the example of the developers for so many employers will ask now for your GitHub account, won't they? They're yes. genuinely interested to see what you have going on the side. Because I think in many many cases, obviously you can't give open access to your current employee, your current employee's business and code and all the sort of secrets. So I think it's a great way to be able to show off what you are doing, what you're interested in, and what you're capable of. And of course, if you don't have that going on the side, then it's going to be difficult to move forward with other employers. But having said that, that would mean that we were staying in the circle, right? That would mean we were staying in the employee sort of circle. Yes. without the intention of moving out. So I used to work with I used to hire a developer when I used to do WordPress sites. He would develop them out for me. And he was actually the head developer over at one of the TV channels in the UK. And he would do these projects all the time for me. And he was, obviously for him, it was just extra money because he had a family, he had interests as well. He was big into sports and running. And obviously, any sport can be pretty expensive when you get into a certain level. So he was always keen, but whenever I spoke to him about this, well, haven't you thought about, going full-time freelance? And it was always like, oh, if only, oh, I'd love to. Oh, it would be great. And as far as I know, he's still working and he's still the head of development this big TV channel. So it's funny how I wonder what it is that keeps people in the, like you said, you were doing it 8 years, right? And for me, that's staggering.
8 years was a long time, but it was such a small business. I could never imagine. I didn't really think of it as a business. I thought of it as a hobby that brought in money, and I enjoyed it, and it was like low stress, and I had no confidence that I would be able to start a business. The 2 years where myself and my partner in 2007 decided to form a business, we gave it a real name. We went to, in the United States, there's something called the Small Business Administration, the SBA. And we went and had a meeting with them, and they gave us some advice about how do we incorporate and what kind of legal structure and tax structure. And they gave us all this advice, and all of a sudden it became real. And once it became real, it started to feel like I could actually be an entrepreneur. I could actually run a business. And the ideas around business and marketing and delivering services and goods, that whole thing really fired me up.
It's exciting. And it's an excited moment, isn't it, going into that office?
Oh, I can remember when I knew I was excited because it wasn't just me working in the mornings or the evenings or Saturdays anymore. Me and this other person would get together every lunch hour and plan how are we going to get clients and what tech are we going to use. And, you know, we were always commiserating. And in fact, after about 8 months of working, you know, separately on our couch or in the evenings at our own homes, we decided we should have an office. And this was the first step for us in leaving the security of the enterprise, was in paying money, $255 a month. We paid for an office in this terrible building on the fifth floor. And this is true, Nathan, where a blind person, a blind man had lived there with a dog, and it smelled and stank like urine, like dog urine, because he had lived in this office. It was the fifth floor of an office building, and the owner had let this blind guy live there. It had a shared bathroom down the hall. We had to pull up the carpet, repaint, pull down all the paneling, repaint everything. But I just remember when we bought used desks, but that writing that check for $255 a month, where both of us had to split that came out of my pocket. And my wife would say, okay, like, you're really investing in your future now. This isn't just pretending, because that money could have gone to something else. And now it feels pretty real.
Did you get your names on the desks as well as on the door?
Mark, we got little tiny nameplates that would hold our business cards, because that was the other big expense. We had business cards, and we went there in the United States. There's a place called Goodwill, and Goodwill will give you almost for free furniture. It's like where very low income people go. Well, they had some old office furniture they'd had for a long time. So we got a couple of chairs and a couple of desks for $50. And I just remember we had to carry them up 5 flights of stairs because the elevator didn't work in this building. Like, it was just terrible. But, you know, when you're faced with adversity and you push through it, and you can go back and look at the ridiculous things I remember just now. I'm remembering these ridiculous situations we had. It really shows me how much I wanted it. Like, mm-hmm. That's how much I wanted, because I was willing to climb 5 flights of stairs 2 or 3 times a day to get to this crappy little office. And I was still so happy to be there.
You're probably the best example of this, because for me, I was literally dumped right in it. So for me, it was make this work. So, but you had come from that previous job, that, and I'm guessing it was a pretty stable job working in IT back then as well. So what moment came for you that allowed you to be able to say, right, you know, this is now the right time? You know, I either have enough money, potential money coming in via clients that I can work with my new business, or I'm guessing something else had to have happened. So what was that trigger point for you? What was the tipping point?
Well, I remember 2 moments very clearly. The first was the last year I worked there. I think every day I came home from work and I complained to my wife about how I really wanted to quit. If only Creo would take off. Like, I would just say, I wonder if it's going to work. I wonder if it's secure. I felt like it was like a boat out on the water, and I was trying to figure out, would it hold my weight? Could I get in the boat? Because it wasn't just me. It was, of course, my whole family, and I was the sole income, and we had 3 teenage children, and my wife was in college, and all these things. So I would just talk about it incessantly. And one day, she said to me, I remember we were in the kitchen of our home, and she took my hand and she said, Marcus, this life, it's always been an adventure. Like, just chase your dreams and we will support you, I promise. And that was one of those moments, like, I'll never forget that she said that. That was the permission from my wife that she was willing to take a risk with me. And that was really important to me. And I would like to say that that day I walked in and gave my notice and acted honorably, but I did not. I said, oh, okay. Well, that's really nice, honey. About 2 weeks later, I was caught up in what happens sometimes in big enterprises. And that is where one vice president dislikes another vice president. And so he begins looking for dirt that can get the vice president he does not like fired. And it turns out that I was the dirt that he found out I had a side job. He pulled all my phone records, all my email, all my web browsing history, and he called me in, this vice president that did not like me or my my boss. And essentially he said, are you running a business on the side? And I said, yes, and everyone knows it. Oh, well, that's against the policy. I won't allow that. So you either have to, by tomorrow, quit this business, you know, quit your side business, or give me your letter of resignation. So that was actually the trigger for me, was somebody saying, it wasn't really about me. I found out later it was about this other person that they went and confronted and wanted to have a political battle with. But I was basically told, you either have to quit your side job or you have to give us a letter of resignation. And at that point, the choice was pretty easy. I wrote out my letter of resignation, which I still have, and I turned it in. And that was actually the point at which I haven't been an employee since. And that was June 30th, 2010.
Wow, you've got a real mind for detail, haven't you? I can't remember the month even that all this happened for me.
I just remember that day. That day was it turned out that if I had quit one day later, I would not have been eligible for some benefits. And then I got caught up into a class action lawsuit with the company because they screwed people on their retirement. We don't have to go into all this, but you get the idea. that for me, I wish I would have said, I will honorably take my stuff and go fearlessly into the unknown.
I will fall on my sword for you.
Right. But really, it was my wife saying, I'm ready to take a risk, combined with someone else saying, you have to either be here or go away, and it's time to decide. It became an easy decision that took 2 years of angst.
Oh, cool. So do you think there are any general guidelines that we can follow?
I do. I do.
First, you do?
I do. I think if you're working for someone and they do not know that you have a side business, that is one of the first things that you should notify your manager of. I really believe this. I always kept my boss in the loop that I had a side business, that I was working on the side, that these were my goals, even for the 8 years where I was doing a little bit on the side. And I felt like it was just a very respectful, open thing to do. And I appreciated it when employees did it for me. There was never any resentment or worry. It was just kept those lines of communication open. So if you are working at a company and you're doing some work on the side, and you're, especially if you're actively thinking, oh, I'd really like to make the jump, before you jump, have that conversation with your boss where you let them know that you do have this other activity. I think that that's just a very respectful, sort of a polite way to handle things. I don't know. Does that seem crazy?
No, it doesn't seem crazy. I don't think I was ever in the situation where it was, or rather, I don't think I was ever in the situation where that could have happened or whether it was an option. Because for me, I never really worked on the side when I was working full time. So it would be something completely new for me. But I mean, it makes complete sense, you know, to keep everything as open as possible. But what about with regards to that moment where you decide that, you know, is it now enough for me to be able to move forward, like to leave behind the stability that I supposedly have? I mean, look, the stability you ended up having, you know, it was do this or you're out kind of thing. So this stability, I think, is always it's a strange concept.
It's a perception.
Yes, exactly. It's a strange concept, and it's never usually dependent on you to a certain degree. So, I mean, do you think as well there is any kind of guideline to say, well, you know, if I'm earning X, then it's fine to move on, or if I have my wife's permission, then it's okay to move on, or if I feel strongly enough? I mean, I don't know. I think my feeling is that it's also very personal when it comes to this, mm-hmm. that it could be enough for you to say, do you know what? I need this. I need to change. Like, you were coming home for 2 years saying, I hate this job. I need to leave. I need to leave. I need to leave. And in the end, you had that moment that allowed you to do so. I've always been quite impetuous, I think. And these moments of I've had enough came along quite frequently in my work, in my working career. And I would always listen to them to the letter. So I would probably have gone in the next day and said, that's it. I'm gone. And I wouldn't think about the consequence. I would just, so yeah, I think it's,
you know, I've become more impetuous. For example, I am, and I think we're going to talk about this on one of our shows, I am quicker now to fire a client or to end something I feel isn't going well. If I wake up and say, I just hate this kind of work, or this, something isn't working out, I am much quicker now, maybe impetuous is the right word, to make a change with the confidence that something will work out. But after 14 years at that big company, I was really concerned. But yeah, I really wish I'd prioritized my own, I guess, mental health or my own desires over the checkbook for a lot of years. Because in the end, I ended up, well, I mean, it's not ridiculous to say I ended up making four or five times as much money annually working for myself as I did working at big company. And in the end, like, I love what you said about security and that it's just a perception, because a lot of the people I work with have been laid off over the past 8 years. Mm-hmm. The company got sold, underwent massive restructuring. So the perception that one, that the big company was secure and working for myself was insecure, actually turned out to be exactly opposite. Staying at the big company was insecure because they laid a lot of people off. But I've been able to pivot my business two or three times to changing markets, to doing different kinds of things. It's a vehicle that I enjoy much more than working for someone else.
Being independent is awesome.
It is. I hate to say it.
We've had this time and time again with Nusi as well, because I mean, this is changing tack slightly, but that whole thing about being independent, meaning that you can make the decisions and that you don't have to rely on that sense of security of someone else, of someone else's company, of someone else's business, somebody else's whim. You know, if the company you're working for decides that they're going to close down your branch, you know, within 4 weeks there and open up a bigger one, you know, 50 miles outside town, well then, you know, you're screwed kind of thing. But if you're independent, you know, and if this is your agency, this is your business, this is your SaaS, then you get to do whatever the heck you want. You know, you can say, you know what, I fancy working out in the country. I'm going to go and rent an office out in the country, 50 miles outside the town, because I feel like it, not because this is all of a sudden put on me by somebody else. That independence thing, I think, is something that for me has just become priceless since working for myself. And every single time I have this set answer for Nuria now, whenever Nuria, if Nuria comes home from work and she's had a particularly horrendous day and kicks off her shoes when she walks in the door and starts stretching or whatever and stressed out, and I'm already sitting on the settee or whatever in front of the chimney with the telly on, and she's just like, whatever the comment is that comes out of her mouth, my answer is, you know what the solution is, start your own business and do whatever the hell you want. That's it.
That's right. You know what? And actually, my wife worked in a variety of nursing careers and would over the past 6 or 7 years. And we would have a similar experience. She would come home from a really hard shift and I'd be lounging in the backyard, watching the kids play, playing with the dog, maybe on my laptop, maybe just reading a book. And she's like, I wish I had your life. And I would say, don't work for someone else. Just work for yourself. Oh, I could never. But now she is. And things have worked out where she is working for herself. And it is so much fun because she will sometimes have this mindset of like, do I need to get permission from someone? Oh, wait, no, I guess I'm the boss. I work for me. So awesome. I can do what I want when I want. And I can sell the products I want, right? And don't get me wrong. If you're listening to this, we might make this sound like it is all just peaches and cream. And it is hard to learn a lot about what we're doing. But once you sort of get some of the basic skills, usually those around marketing and selling and frankly accounting and money management, your life gets pretty good and you start to see that you can enter new industries, you can sell new kinds of products and services, because once you've done it once, those same skills usually are very transferable to some other aspect of bringing in revenue for your business.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally.
But that said, yeah. I mean, going back to this idea, my opinion, the quick steps are, you know, have a candid conversation with your supervisor. Let them know if you're on the cusp of leaving, just maybe you should just leave, right? But when you leave, instead of just cutting the cord and giving somebody the finger and walking out, maybe you ask if they are interested in retaining you as a contractor. This is especially true, I found, in IT. I think it might be in design or
I know quite a few people have done that, and it's worked out quite well for them, right? Because you don't quite cut the cord, do you?
Yeah, and so think about it, but it does require the mindset change of now it's my business and I want you to turn from an employer, I would like you to make you a client and I'll treat you very well and we'll work out a rate, you know, but you're starting to take responsibility for your own taxes, your own retirement, your own equipment, your own office space. And as a contractor, you then have a much greater ability to negotiate when you work, where you work, what you work on, all kinds of things. You might just turn into a contractor that for the first few months feels a lot like an employee, but quickly over time, continue to push forward with getting some new clients. And I think once you get two or three more new clients, it starts to feel like your employer is one of many. And now I think you really do have a business that you start to build confidence in.
We were going to go through a couple of questions today, but I think, as per usual, we've gone pretty deep on the very first question we had. So I think what we're going to do is maybe next week we'll come back and we'll answer a couple of other questions we've got.
Yes, that sounds great. And if you have questions you'd like us to answer, you can send them where, Nathan?
podcast@thecreativebusinesspodcast.com. And those will get straight through to Marcus and myself. Hopefully some more questions next week. And we will be back on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening, and look forward to seeing your comments and your feedback, Twitter, iTunes, email, however you'd like to send it to us.
Oh, and by the way, just as a reminder, if people want to find you online, where you're on Twitter, right?
I am. I'm just zeros at Twitter is my Twitter handle. And then you can find me at marcusblankenship.com. Sign up for my list, blah, blah, blah. Get a bunch of free stuff on managing developers and managing yourself.
Cool. And why just zeros?
There's an old joke.
I know there's a story there. Go on.
There's an old joke I heard when I was a young programmer. It went like this. An old programmer was talking to a young programmer, and he said, "Back in my day, we only had the zeros. We didn't have the ones."
Okay. Now I know. I remember ages ago looking for you on Twitter and typing in all different formats, variations of Marcus Blankenship, yeah. And just like, no, that's not
and
right.
Now
that's
the best
right.
I can get is like Marcus Blanken 4 or something like that.
That's
so
terrible, terrible. And I'm sure it's not a common name either, but it's impossible to get any names on the line there. So, and all right, cool. Well, for myself, you know, if you want to find out more about me or my business, it's nusi.com. Loads of stuff going on there, the blog, loads of freebies, and find out a bit more about me as well. So we'll leave it there for this week, and we'll be back again same time next Tuesday. Hope you have a great weekend, and thank you very much, Marcus. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. Soon.